I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Rugby League Digest. I'm Michael Adams, here with Andrew Paskin. How's it going, Andy?
I'm well, mate. How are you?
I'm good. You've set the cat amongst the pigeons this week on Twitter, so I thought it was cause for an emergency podcast. Nothing gets people riled up, it seems, more than immortal talk. So there's been a lot of discussion on Twitter this week about the immortal, so we thought we'd get together and thrash it out in this forum.
Yeah, it was a good discussion online, and it proves yet again like the necessity for this waiting period, because there's so many different opinions on it, and all of them have got valid points.
Well, let's start there. The reason it came up was Peter Volandi's making a comment that the five-year waiting period could be waived to enshrine Cameron Smith immediately. And what did you make of that?
I can't believe he's actually considering it. It's like, to me, it must be a troll or something, because the guy's so in tune with the man on the street, and that's why he's so good at, you know, getting his popularity over. So I can't believe that he's considering it.
I mean, you could view it cynically and say maybe it was just to keep, you know, rugby league front and centre in people's minds, but, you know, at the time we're recording this, we've got a deciding Origin encounter tonight. Like, surely it could have waited till next week if that was the aim. The thing that came to mind with me was, who's asking for this?
No one.
like it Bob? Just came out of it came out of nowhere with like no impetus for it. It's not like something's broken in the system that he's trying to remedy. Like, I think across the game, everyone is happy with the system as it currently is in place.
I didn't even think of that. Who's asking for it? Because, perhaps Telegraph journalists, maybe? I don't know. It actually might be a favor for a journalist, possibly, because, you know, it does rile people up and gets people talking. So,
And there seems to be, it's coming out this week, a lot of antipathy between Cameron Smith and sections of the media. So that's been a big story in the press. So, yeah, maybe it is linked. I'm not sure.
I've never seen a guy as decorated as him reviled so much. I mean, maybe he is a bit of a jerk off the field or something, but, I mean, there's been a million jerks in rugby league.
And the thing is, there's not that much evidence for it. Like, he's been scandal-free. I mean, there's obviously, the salary cap and people wondering how implicated he personally is. There's been a couple of unsubstantiated rumours over the years. But, you know, there's never been, like, a, you know, drug or alcohol scandal or, you know, violence or anything like that. Like, he seems to have lived a pretty clean and private life, you know?
Well, I wasn't even speaking of scandals. I was speaking more of personality. Like, we have a current immortal, Graham Changalanglands, who's known as one of the worst blokes ever. So, I mean, if bad blokes are a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. Let's talk a bit about Smith later in the episode. And the other thing that struck me about the furor that Volandis has wrought with, you know, his announcement during the week is it just emphasizes what terrible custodians of their own history the NRL has been. Like, for a start, not owning the Immortals concept until the demise of Rugby League Week, it means, like, from the start, they don't own the narrative about greatness in their own game. That's the role of a media organization. Secondly, having a Hall of Fame, but up until recently doing nothing at all with it. So it's so buried as a concept that in many people's eyes, the Immortals is still the only enshrinement of rugby league greatness.
I mean, the Hall of Fame in every other sport, NBA, NFL, basically all the American sports, even the WWE, the Hall of Fame is more revered than the NRL one, and we've got such great players in it that it's disgraceful.
And this is what I hate. Like, the debate should be moving away from immortals to the Hall of Fame. Like, as you saw this week, all you do is have people arguing online about established greats of the game that everyone agrees is one of the all-time greats. You know, like, the debate shouldn't be whether JT is an immortal. The debate should be, you know, is Ryan Girdler a Hall of Famer? You know, that's where the debate needs to get to publicly.
Yeah, it's just, it's not even on the radar, is it?
Yeah. And the fact that Volandi's brought it up in this way, it just, it's another way of underselling the Hall of Fame as a concept when we need to boost it.
Yeah, I'd like to get to the bottom of why he brought it up. I mean, that would be the most interesting point, but it just could become a smokescreen of fans arguing about players.
Exactly. And now we're going to be massive hypocrites because instead of talking about the Hall of Fame, we're going to spend some time talking about the immortals and what is an immortal and who should get in. So I want to start with discussing immortals as a concept and trying to put into words what an immortal is. I thought you had some great statements on the subject on Twitter during the week. So do you want to, give your basic assessment of what is an immortal?
Well, I think these statements were probably even yours in our discussion on the immortals, which is on our YouTube from many, many years ago on the weekly show when we had a segment on the immortals. And it's a hard listen production-wise, but it's a great content. So if you'll check it out on our YouTube channel. But yeah, like, it's hard to articulate even. It's more a feeling for me, but it's that magic dust, which I think you brought up.
Yeah.
The extra special magic dust part of the player is the key. And, you know, I mean, all these guys with the high Hall of Fame rankings, I don't think you can tell the story of rugby league without most of them. So that's a given for an immortal. But just that special quality, the indefinable quality of immortality.
That's the thing about it. It is the most intangible known to man. And that's what pisses me off when I see these attempts to quantify it, saying, it should be, you know, 1 in 10 Hall of Famers is an immortal. They need to add an immortal every 5 years and rah, rah, rah. It's like, no, an immortal is announced when an immortal appears or is worthy. Like, if we don't get an immortal for 50 years, I'd be happy with that if there was no one befitting the label.
Do you think this last mass batch of older immortals, which are well overdue, has caused that feeling a little bit?
I think there's something to that. As much as I kind of agreed with the way they did it at the time to install 3 black and white immortals at the same time, which I think that era was underrepresented. And as we'll get to a bit later, there's probably still a couple that should go in from that era. But installing 5 at once, when you add the 3 black and whites plus, well, I guess Proven's black and white too, but the 3 pre-war plus Proven and Meninga, that does, in a way, make it less special if 5 can get installed at the same time.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking myself. But just as an aside, how do you feel about Meninga now, you know, a few years down the track?
Let's save that for a bit because I want to talk about the 13 immortals we've got and a breakdown of mm-hmm. them that I've put together. Mm-hmm. Just I want to stay on this stardust factor. A big one that came up during the week is the Sterling v Kenny comparison. And I know you're a big Kenny booster. You had him, you know, very, very, very short, just short of immortality. You had Sterling mm-hmm. a bit lower. That got some pushback online, people saying Sterling was the better player and people arguing that Sterling should be an immortal. This is the interesting thing. So, ball in hand, I don't think there's anyone who would rather see Sterling than Kenny.
Yeah.
But it's hard to argue that Sterling didn't have the better career, wasn't the more decorated player, and was probably the better player overall. Like, I think without Kenny, Parramatta probably still win, you know, 3 to 4 of those premierships. Without Sterling, I don't know how true that is.
Well, interesting you say that. I mean, I've had time to consider this discussion online with all the excellent points and everything, and I still think he's just short, Kenny. I don't think he gets there. But the unfortunate part for Sterling is it's a style of play. The guy didn't have any zip, and he's just a magic organizer and a great halfback and great leader and everything like that. So his style of play hurts him in a mortal discussion, unfortunately.
And is that just the nature of the beast? Because if that's the defining characteristic, then it's always going to be weighted towards certain positions, certain styles of player. And it is that hair on end, tell the grandkids, everyone in the stands on their feet as soon as they touch the ball, which not every great player is going to engender that, you know, visceral reaction to.
Well, I think you can even quantify it like this. This indefinable, intangible part of it is when they get the ball in their hands, does your heart rate rise a little bit? Like, and that could be even for Paul Gallen or Glenn Lazarus or Cameron Smith, for example. It's like when Joey got the ball, it's like going over a bit of a bump in a roller coaster. You're like, oh, here we go. When Lewis got the ball, when Meninga got the ball, it's like when John Raper got the ball.
Yep.
You know, we didn't see him, you know. So, Gasnier, et cetera. So, I think Sterling had that as well, I suppose. But
well, Joey's the interesting comparison because, like, Joey is, in many respects, an organizer. It was just he was so good at organizing that you marveled at it.
He was just so good at everything. He was inventing kicks. He was smashing guys in defense. He was getting tries close to the line. So he did everything Sterling and Alfie did together.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good way of putting it. But the other thing I thought of is have changes to the game and, you know, changes to player longevity, all of these things. Have they changed the debate? If you look at Reg Gasnier, he played 127 games. Like, we'll never see an immortal like that again. But if you look at the names coming up on our Twitter thread and the ones, you know, closest to the top or the ones considered next in line, they're almost exclusively 300 gamers. And you wonder if weight of achievement has overtaken that, you know, those pure intangibles in the immortal discussion.
Well, this is going to be the argument for Smith. Is he an accumulator or is he an immortal? And maybe in 5 years my opinion will change on it, but I'm trying to rate them on their, you know, on the feeling, and you know, of course you take the achievements into it, but like Joey only won 1.5 comps, and Thurston only won a couple, you know.
So of the 13 immortals we've got, I did a little exercise where I put them all in a table with two columns, Stardust and Compiler. So I thought I'd just one by one go through the immortals. So I had Messenger as Stardust. I also, once I looked at Dally Messenger and Norm Proven, I had to add a third category of, which I've called ornament. As in, like, Dally Messenger, what that name signifies, the way he legitimized rugby league and got it going. Like, I don't think rugby league gets going here as it did without someone like him.
Agree.
The fact that 100 years later, his name's on the award, I think Dally Messenger exists in this different category.
Yeah, I mean, if your name's synonymous with the sport 110 years later, you're pretty special.
Yeah, and he didn't have a long rugby league career, so you couldn't put him in that compiler class. So it's all Stardust, but then it's this extra thing. And I think the same's true of Proven, who he's the only player I didn't put any Stardust to. I think he's all compiler in that he, you know, won the 10 comps. He was the captain coach of the greatest team of all time for a number of years. As a St. George fan, he is like, I'm so glad that he's an immortal, and I think he should be. But without the trophy, I don't think he's an immortal.
Yeah, but that's a special case. And again, it's when it pops up. It's like that's never going to pop up again, you would think. And
yeah.
I don't think anyone argues that Proven's not an immortal.
No. But so I think he and Messenger exist in this category outside of the main, like, qualifiers.
Mm.
If you look at Frank Burge, I think Stardust and Compiler, he had the records. He was, you know, known as an incredible player. Dave Brown, same thing. Like, obviously, it's record upon record. You could argue that he is probably more compiler than Stardust, but he clearly had Stardust in spades. Churchill, the same. The Stardust and a long, decorated career. Proven, we've discussed. Johnny Raper, same thing. I think he's got both. Reg Gasnier is probably the only one who is pure Stardust.
Well, now, bringing up this pure Stardust aspect, someone wrote a comment, I didn't get the name, unfortunately, and I scoffed at the time, but it actually makes a bit of sense. Jared Hayne, if you're talking about Stardust, this guy, he might have sprinkled it on the ground and spat on it, but he had Stardust in spades.
This is the... I'm really glad you brought this up at this time, because when I looked at the Immortals, I was like, oh, the difference between someone like Hayne or Greg Inglis. I think Hayne and Greg Inglis exist in a similar place where natural ability and what they could do with ball in hand, they should be, you know, the first in discussion for immortality, but for various reasons, they're not. And I think a big part of that is the switching off factor. The, you know, in Hayne's case, disappearing for seasons at a time. In Inglis's case, just kind of floating in or out of the play. And so I was thinking, well, all the Immortals, they were always in the game. But when when you think about the way people talk about Gasnier, you do get words like mercurial. And it seemed like, obviously we never saw him play, but it seemed like he was a player who would, you know, would be known to kind of sometimes hang back, and it would just, the game would come to him at certain moments and he would take it away, but not someone who was in the thick of the action all the time.
Well, maybe his 127 games or whatever his record was, maybe he didn't have time to sort of you know, go missing as well.
Yeah.
The short, but I mean, Inglis for the first few years of his career was considered almost a shoo-in as an immortal.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that we didn't get to see him at full bore the whole time. But
no.
Yeah, but I found that an interesting point because, yeah, those guys were pure Stardust.
And that's another way maybe the criteria has changed. Like, can you get away with only showing up some of the time when you've got blokes like, you know, Thurston and Lockyer and these blokes who you always knew they were there. You never forgot that Darren Lockyer was playing, you know?
That's right. But I think impact on winning is probably one of the biggest quantifiers, is in Melbourne don't win without Cameron Smith, Newcastle don't win without Joey. Brisbane wouldn't have won the early years without Lockyer, and Australia in the Ashes. And
did you mean Langer then for the early Queensland, early Brisbane? You said
no, I meant the early. And without Lockyer for the early Queensland nine in a row, whatever it was.
Yeah,
and Mal with early Canberra teams. You know, if you took Inglis and I suppose Hayne had that as well. If you took Hayne out of Parramatta, they weren't much shot, but Inglis, if you took him out of sides, they could still play well type thing, you know, so.
Yeah. It's just hard to see a player now who isn't there all the time. And I think maybe that, if you look at the first lot, there's very few halves. So I mean, Fulton was centre, 5/8. It's really not until you get to, like, Lewis and Johns that you're getting halves, you know, enshrined as immortals. And, you know, now the next batch are almost exclusively halves. So it seems like something else has changed there in the way people talk about immortals.
Well, I think immortality reflects the nature of the game. So I think if Brad Clough didn't get injured, he would have been an immortal at lock. So
yeah.
It's whoever's displaying immortality in the positions that are impacting the game, I suppose, at that era.
Yeah. I'll go through the rest of my list. So Langlands and Fulton, both Stardust and compiler. Beetson's an interesting one because he clearly had some Stardust. He had a long career. I'd argue he has... I've put him in a very light shade of ornament just for the fact that, you know, his status as an Aboriginal leader, his status as really getting State of Origin going, and everything that has come since, I think there's a shade of ornament about his place in the game.
I think he's even higher in ornament now than when he went in. You know, the origin thing, etc. But here's another quantifier, asking old people, not even asking them, mentioning the player's name to an old person, and they straight away go, he was the greatest footballer I ever saw.
Yeah.
Like a few of my uncles would say that about Beetson.
Mm.
He used to offload all the time. I was like, calm down, like, you know, whatever. But it's like the same way when someone asks me about Joey, when I'm 60, I'm going to say exactly the same thing. It's like you have to trust the people that were there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think younger people, and maybe part of it is that we're getting a younger crop of like media people, like people even younger than us are now starting to really enter the discussion in a big way. And I mean, that's not only is it inevitable, but it's a great thing to see happening. But at the same time, like I think there needs to be still respect for people who have watched it all, you know?
Well, I mean, a guy I want to bring up later is Ron Coote, because I use his name every day in rhyming slang, but I never saw him play. It's like, how can I comment on him? I don't want James Hooper running the Immortals, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mal's another funny one, because I think he's almost all compiler. As much as he did have that, like, you know, Mal's got the ball, I'm interested now. It is without the four tours, without the huge success at Canberra, I don't think we're talking about him as an immortal.
Yeah, well, I'm going to disagree on that, because he had the magic story as well. He had the takes care of the Brisbane comp. He's a king up there. Starts off Origin with the you know, 7 from 7 or whatever it was, goes all the way through to 94, gets the tours, saves us in the 1990 with that, you know, big long try. Comes back from the broken arms. He's a monster amongst boys at the time, and like he had that Hollywood story as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And his Queensland teammate Wally Lewis, almost all stardust. It's really hard for a person who played most of his career in the BRL for people in Sydney. And let's be honest, like the Sydney comp like dominates the media, so it's really hard to kind of put achievements in the BRL into its proper context. So for us, and the way that the story's being told, Wally Lewis is the guy who turns up 3 times a year and kills New South Wales and everyone hates him, you know? So it's almost...
Let's speak about Sterling then. Sterling's playing the best of the best in the Sydney comp, but he's not playing Lewis or Miles or Meninga winning those comps, early comps.
Yeah. Yeah, true. So, I mean, yeah, you take something away there. You wonder how, if like, Gene Miles is a great example, because if you look at the way people talk about him, you know, not long after he retired, people were putting him above Mal. You know, a lot of the greats of the game were saying, I'd take Gene Miles over Mal. He's almost entirely retreated from any kind of discussion about immortality. Like, I think he's, you know, in many ways, like, forgotten, like especially among younger people. Like he's just not talked about for what a great center he was and how highly he was regarded at the time.
Well, it's also the change to the second row towards the last few years, which takes a bit away as well.
Yeah.
Like Chris Close was a great center, and I only knew him as an overweight prop, you know what I mean? Like, but he was a good prop too, for that matter. But it's like when you change your position like that to a totally different one, it's a bit weird.
Wally Lewis as well also has an element of ornament. I mean, the fact that 40 years after Origin started, he's still like State of Origin personified, you know? Like there's something mythical about that. The fact that he's the name of the, you know, the best player, man of the series. It's not like the Lewis Fittler Award or something. It's just the Wally Lewis Medal.
Well, I'm going to be the first person in rugby league discussion to shit on the abilities of Wally Lewis, but here we go. I suggest that he went missing a little bit towards the end of his career, especially.
Do you mean his club career or Origin?
Club career.
Yeah.
Club career. So it proves that, you know, the intangibles can override a bit of, you know, poor form or something like that.
Yeah. But again, you wonder if he'd gone to Manly in 85 with Gene Miles like he was going to, is installed straight into a champion Manly team, probably gives him a you know, a bit more legs than an expansion team that was very good but still green. You know, again, it comes into this BRL versus New South Wales RL kind of thing, like where how do you weigh it up?
Well, the first point I want to make there is, can you imagine Arthurson's face when he thought he had them? It would have been like the Cheshire Cat. But and then the face afterwards, he would have been calling Rothmans in tears. But that era, the BRL era is going to be hard to judge on and has been. And then the Super League era is going to be hard to judge on
because
of obvious reasons.
And then our last immortal, Andrew Johns, who I've put alone with Reg Gasnier as being all stardust. Like when you look at the number of games he played, the, you know, his rep games, the rest of it, like it's not that impressive, the figures. Like his individual awards are great, all the rest of it, but it's so much of John's is just stardust. It's just like everyone watching was going, oh yeah, he is without doubt one of the greatest players of all time.
You can always break it down to moments though in a career that you've seen the whole lot of, right? Now, the debut, magical. The comeback to Origin to right the wrongs of the perceived going missing in Origin, that's a huge moment. Like you can break it down to key moments in the careers you've seen the whole way. But for me, it was just every game this guy was carrying Newcastle on his back.
And that leads us to the next crop, the contenders.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And Cameron Smith is the reason we're talking about this now. So let's start with Cameron Smith. And I think the fact that there is no debate whatsoever about Cameron Smith kind of answers the question and is also maybe telling for some of the others. Like, I don't think I've even seen anyone arguing that Cameron Smith is not an immortal.
Haven't you? I've seen a few people argue it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I mean... But it's the same as, like, I thought Lockyer was a definite immortal when he retired. So Cameron Smith might go off the boil as well a little bit. So it's, and the problem with him is he's not a flashy player. He's just an amazing player. So, but looking at it right now, after he's going to retire on the end of a comp, he's sixth comp if you count the funny money ones,
which you don't.
The guy, well, I do actually, because, like, you know, it's.
I'm happy for people to count it as an individual thing. Like, yep, he was on the field. He was captain when they won those premierships. But the thing about Smith is I don't think he needs them on his record.
He doesn't, know, but it's but also it wasn't just the comps. It was the being at the top of the pops every year, competing for the comp in the grand final, there or thereabouts. But for me, it's a guy who controls the game, and he controlled every game he was ever a part of.
Yeah.
The game played at his pace. He never got injured with the body of an accountant, the well-worn adage. And you make 50 tackles a game and control the pace and outcome of a game 450 times.
Yeah.
You're an immortal, in my view.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought you had an interesting comment during the week where, like, Cameron Smith, in many ways, is the ultimate compiler, not a flashy player. Insane, like, individual records, like over 400 games, 56 tests, 40-odd origins, whatever the final tally was. Like, insane individual stats. But you made the argument that you think he's more than a compiler.
Yeah, it's for that reason. It's the game management and almost the ability to make the right decision every time for 450 games.
Yeah, it's insane.
The one guy I'd like to hear his opinion on in 3, 4, 5 years is Joey, and I think Joey is gonna rank him an immortal.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's exactly right. That is why you wait the 5 years. We're going to talk about, you know, I don't want to spend too much time weighing up the individual cases of all the players anyone's mentioned because, again, you're arguing about the merits of established greats of the game.
I mean, it just comes down to almost this. Does it feel right?
Yep.
It's like Mal feels right, just. The rest of them feel right. Does Sterling feel right? Not almost, but not there.
So let's talk about your shortlist, which I'm almost entirely in agreement on. So you had Duncan Thompson as the next oldie to be installed. I'm right with you there. I think a friend of the show, Andrew Ferguson, said it online during the week that the fact that he was still considered the best halfback to have played the game 70 years after he finished playing, like, yeah. I mean, what more evidence do you want?
Yeah.
The Downs Fox, in the top five nicknames of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, it shouldn't come into it, but playing your whole career with a bullet sustained during the First World War, I mean, it's a compelling narrative, you know?
Yeah. It was probably one of those ones that could have been removed. He's like, I've got to get to work, you know? But like, let's bring up another name. Like, I think Andrew Ferguson brought up the name Pony Halloway, which I don't know too much about except for what you've taught me. But Brian Bevan's got to be considered.
The funny thing about Bevan is, yes, he does, because like that is an insane, like unbelievable, like individual record, you know. And anyone who saw him play was like, he's the ugliest person I've ever seen. I don't know why. I don't know why he like was so good, but like no one could touch him, you know.
Wasn't he described as like a bandaged up like an old draft horse or something?
Yeah, that's not...
And you made the point, why do we have to insult his appearance every time we discuss him? And we've done it again.
But the thing about it is, if you do include Bevan, then suddenly you've got to include, like, you've got to consider English football. And I just think it's already such a can of worms. It's already so hard to like weigh up these careers. That how do you do that?
Well, you aren't going to get an immortal from current English football. Like, we aren't going to put Robbie Paul in the thing. You know, great player over there, but it was a weaker comp. But back then, he was playing in a stronger comp almost.
Yeah, but how do you quantify that? How do you say, right, Bevan is a special case, we're including them, but we don't want to hear your arguments about, you know, Billy Boston, whoever you want to name.
No, I mean, sure, we'll hear them, but I mean... Yeah, but no one's going to be putting forward current players from Super League, you wouldn't think.
Yeah. I mean,
But then you've got Ellery. So, like, you know, yeah. Do you count Ellery?
Yeah, well,
you
that's...
Did it across both, but...
That's what I'm saying. Like, his Australian career, as, you know, mythical as it was, isn't anywhere near the standard needed to get him to that level. Obviously, he's considered, if not the greatest English player, one of the very top handful of English players of all time. But... I just think if you include Bevan, then you've got to have that discussion about Hanley, and you've got to have a discussion about all these other blokes that, you know, I think it just needs to be kept separate.
I don't think so. It's like, it's rugby league. It's not the Australian rugby league. I think definitely if you're good enough, you get in.
Yeah, true. Like
if Sonny Bill had stayed and got better in rugby league, he'd be a candidate, you would think.
But he would have done that by playing most of his career in the Australian League.
Yeah, but I mean, I think judging on the old, like, who was that guy that Rex Mossop you thought was the hardest? Vince?
Oh, Karalius.
Yeah, so like, there's a guy that was worthy of the best player in the world in the 50s, you know? Like,
yeah.
So in that era, 40s, 50s, 60s, yeah. Whatever it was, even the 70s.
The 80s,
and then you got that... The French fullback as well was considered Stardust personified.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You make a good point. And when international football was at a high point, you know, maybe that's something we can, you know, like bring into the equation. So I'm
at least consider
that.
Them.
Yeah. The only other kind of post-war or black and white era player I want to talk about is Harold Horder, who was all Stardust, had that reputation, considered the you know, the best outside back for decades after he finished playing. Like, I think he and Thompson should go in. I can understand the argument for Bevan. That's kind of where I'd leave it in terms of the pre-war era.
Well, let me ask you, like, why didn't Horty go in this first lot? He's almost at ornament stage himself.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know. I thought he should have, so I can't answer that. It was more like that. I think they just said they want three, and so three was the number. That's the way I read it.
Mm. But perhaps that Thompson and Horta will go in next.
Except at the last Immortals induction, Greenberg seemed to suggest that this was shutting the book on that era.
As frenemy of the show Cody Dobbs once put eloquently, he's the emptiest of suits, Todd Greenberg. So I think we can reverse that decision.
Let's get to the rest of your shortlist. So you had Cameron Smith as the next, current player to be installed, obviously after the 5-year waiting period. That was basically where you made the cutoff. So you keep Lockyer short, Thurston short, Fittler, Sterlo, Alf. So why do you restrict it just to Cameron Smith?
Well, and again, I leave that open for 5 years of cooling off, but I don't know. I just don't feel it with the other ones. I mean, Kenny, I think he's just short on compiling aspects, and the end of the career was a bit of a off the cliff, as one of our listeners put on Twitter. But I mean, watching that 85 game, Challenge Cup game, and then the classic highlights. It's just hard to forget him. He's just so good, but I just think he's just doesn't feel right putting him in the same company as the. We aren't talking about the best of the best. We're talking about the best of the best of the best.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that shows that maybe the parameters have changed, because you need to have some element of compilation. Like, you can't be all Stardust now.
Well, does it feel right to you, like with him?
No, and same, and for the exact same reasons. Like, he feels like the ultimate example of what you want out of an immortal, but you just feel the career is just short of immortality.
Yeah. It's so weird that we're just going on gut feeling, but that's how you got to do it, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I think you make a good point that Lockyer was considered a shoo-in when he retired, and now the debate has called. And that's not you saying he's definitely not an immortal, but just acknowledging that the debate has changed, and now what was considered a certainty isn't clear in everyone's minds.
I can still remember him being... He's just like MacGyver, getting teams out of like series losses like regularly. Carrying Brisbane, and the change from fullback to 5'8" to become the best in both positions, and the class was just there, and I still remember that. I can still feel it, but I don't know. There's something about, he's almost at Mal's level. I think Mal's probably the bottom of the Immortals list. I think he's almost at Mal's level, but not quite.
It's so funny because the way I think about him is just clinical, absolutely clinical, always put the ball in the right place, could just kill you. I'm talking about as a New South Wales fan, could just kill you time and time again, just effortlessly, he never seemed to break a sweat. But as everyone listening to this will know, I'm deep in the weeds with late 90s research at the moment, and just hearing about the way they're talking about young Lockyer, like breakout year in 97, and he was considered like the ultimate excitement machine.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, his game changed when he moved to 5'8", but he certainly had any definition of X factor you could name.
But let's not forget he was such a spindly little thing when he debuted at fullback too. It was like 78 kilos or something like that.
Yeah. My feelings on Lockyer is he feels just short to me, but if he goes in, I'm like happy with that.
Yeah, I'm not going to go protest in the streets if Lockyer becomes an immortal. Yeah. But it just doesn't feel there.
Yeah,
do you reckon his commentary impacted that?
Well, I don't know, because it usually goes the other way. If you look at Brad Fittler, the day he retired, I don't think anyone was talking about him as being an immortal. I mean, I certainly didn't think he was anywhere near it, but the call has just got louder and louder and louder, and this maybe has something to do with what I'm saying about the young crop of journalists coming through. Maybe people who, remember him more from his East days than his Panthers days. It seems like he has grown in estimation in terms of an immortal candidate, and I think that has something to do with him being so present in the press and now New South Wales coach. I think, like, it's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, but in the inverse, I've come to appreciate Gene Miles a lot more after he retired. So it's like,
but you're kind of in the minority, because I don't think his public estimation has grown in the way Brad Fittler's has.
True. But I mean, if you look at Fittler's career, he ticks all the boxes, and the way he moved from center to a game managing 5/8 was magical. But he really was, this is horrible thing to say, but a bit of a one trick pony. Like the step was the key to it, and the best step of all time probably. But if I think of him, I just think of him close to the line with that step and, you know, the decent kicking game and decent leadership. That's all I think
about. But I also think he became like a brilliant organizer in the back end of his career, yeah. Like at the Roosters.
He did.
So I think there's some versatility there. I prefer, and this goes again to the intangible kind of element of the Immortals. I much prefer the kind of like the running Fittler of the earlier years, the kind of like, you know, the stepping, the rest of it, than the kind of the grand old man of the Roosters years.
Yeah, he's got the storybook debut. He's got the, you know, the young man in the brilliant Blues Origin teams. He's got all the ticks, but I think he's fairly short.
Yeah, I do as well. But yeah, that's just what I was saying. The fact that, like, I think that was the universal thought when he retired, and now 15 years on, he's like very close to the top of the list, the way people talk about it.
Yeah, not for me, but...
Agreed. Thurston is a really funny one, because I remember, like, when he was playing, there were calls to enshrine him as an immortal before he even retired. You know, this was on his, you know, the year-long farewell tour of 2018, you know. And I don't think that was discussed at any serious level, but the fact that the calls were being made just tells you the way he was, like, instantly enshrined. And then in only 2 years, that has started to cool a bit.
But you can't underestimate the knee-jerk reaction of rugby league people.
Yeah. I mean, like,
it's ingrained, you know. You can't escape it. But I think he's gone way off the boil in my view in discussions. But looking back at his career, I don't see him at the same level as Joey. I just don't.
I think he had too many, like, really bad Cowboys seasons, and I don't mean him personally, I mean the team. And he could argue that the team around him wasn't good enough, and there's probably a lot of truth to that. But it still kind of diminishes him a bit when you see him, like, you know, the Cowboys finishing last or second last, and he's there every week, you know, arguing at the ref and being all frustrated about it. That does, yeah, kind of take away something from him.
Is there something about finishing your career strong? Like, can he... started strong, middle strong, off the cliff.
Yeah.
And then Thurston started, you know, built up for a long, through the middle of quite a few years, and then finished as like a grand old controller of the game. It's like, and you sort of remember that part of it. Mm. But Joey was Joey from literally the debut.
Yeah. Do you think the Cowboys making the grand final without him, with a like pretty ordinary team in 2017, kind of counts against him?
Yeah, it shouldn't though, but it does.
Yeah.
It's like that was sort of a miracle sort of thing, but he was sort of, you know, he built that team as well.
Yeah.
It's a shame for him, but yeah, I think it does count against him, but I don't think it's his fault.
See, to me, he's probably the closest. Like, I'd put him closer than Lockyer even. And
would you?
I would, yeah.
I'd put Lockyer closer than him. Like, because Lockyer got it done more.
Yeah,
like,
that's very true.
I mean, they're all part of the big Queensland run, and Thurston and Lockyer, but Cameron Smith was there the whole time.
Yeah.
And without Cameron Smith, I don't think that run happens. But they're playing on a, you know, playing behind a good pack, so to speak. So
yeah.
I don't think that should count for as much. But
the last person I want to talk about is one who, like, came up again and again during the week in the debate, which is Alan Langer, who I think is a fair way short. I'd put him, like, maybe slightly above Fittler, but, like, in that same kind of group, a fair way short. But I do think, like, he's been kind of left out of the discussion in Origin terms in particular, where it seemed like it's gone from Wally to, you know, the Lockyer and Thurston and Smith eras, where, like, Alfie, like, dominated the 90s.
I think it's unfair to the maximum, and this is coming from a Sticky fan. I put him above Thurston.
Yeah, right.
It's like he's decorated beyond all belief. Like, 87, coming in as a child, like, with a child's body, and and doing that at Origin, and then the Broncos, and then, you know, changing eras with the Broncos, and then coming back from England to win Origin, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And doing it with the body of, like, Alf from the TV show Alf. you know what I think it's actually hurt him, Mick, is the training.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of...
I was going to bring that up. Like, he's too present, but not in a way that lends itself to gravitas. Like, the fact that you see him, like, running water, like, every week during the season, like, it just seems to, like, normalize him.
I really respect that he does that, by the way, because he just does what he loves, and, like, well, that's the key to life, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's the happiest man alive.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
I've always said, he's the inverse Mary. All Mary wanted to do was run the water. Like, he was perfectly happy living that life, fell ass backwards into being the longest-serving Dragons coach, and is now probably miserable. You know, like, he just should have done the Alf.
I saw all of Alf's career, pretty much. Bit young, but still saw it. And he had a few, like, you know, problems in his game. He wasn't the best organizer.
Too much jinking.
At the start. A lot of jinking. But, you know, he invented the short kick almost, you know, like, or at least redesigned the short kick. That's something to consider in a immortality debate.
And again, it kind of proves the point where we're, like, arguing these semantics about people everyone knows are great players. Like, there just seems something self-defeating about the exercise.
It's actually obnoxious because we're talking about the faults of the top echelon of the Hall of Fame, the hardest sport in the world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I know we've just spent an hour doing it, but going forward, I want the debate to be, like, you know, Jason Stevens, Hall of Famer or not, you know, name any of these, like, fringe players that were very good to great, you know, like, why are we arguing about all-time players?
Can I bring one more into the debate?
Yeah, yeah.
It came up on the Twitter quite a fair bit from our older listeners, and they were adamant. Ron Coote, adamant they were. So, I mean, I never saw him play, obviously, but I've heard the old guys talk about him like he was just short of John Raper.
Well, that's the thing, and I think that kind of – that is what elevates him, but it's also what harms his case. Because I think when he came along, he just had that next Raper tag put on him and, like, in all respects lived up to it, became one of the greats of the game, but, like, was kind of like – you know, this is just – obviously I didn't see him, so I'm just going off – the perception was, like, not quite as good as Raper. And then so now when people like us are trying to make a case, you have to go, like, okay, well, yeah, like, he was a great player by all reports, but, like, if he wasn't quite as good as this bloke, why is he going on the same level as him?
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame then, isn't it? Because, I mean, so what was Ron Coote's style of play then?
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's just he's more talked about for the cover defense. Which, you know, Raper gets talked about a lot, but Raper, like, always gets talked about as this all-round genius, you know, like, just putting blokes through holes and, like, just a relentless competitive drive and then obviously the brilliant defense. Whereas I don't think Coote had that same reputation for just all-round genius.
Right. It's interesting. There's at least three or four listeners that chimed in on Twitter with that, so I thought it was well worth a discussion at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if his rhyming slang edition has kept him in the minds of people.
It has. Yeah, like I think it's what this discussion has shown is that there are all these factors outside of pure footballing talent that can help or hinder your case.
Well, in that case, we should be discussing Stan Gerd.
Anyway, this was just an impromptu chance to get all of this off our chest. Do you have anything else to say about the Immortals?
No, except I really love talking about it. I love the online discussion, and I love the this discussion. It's just such a interesting topic. And it all comes down to fairy dust, and we've just wasted our time again for an hour.
Exactly. And I'm sure there'll once again be a lot of strong reaction to what we've talked about. So by all means, tell us why we're wrong. Facebook, Twitter, email, you know the drill. Just as we finish, I want to give everyone an update about what we have got going on. So This will be the last time you hear from us in 2020. I delivered to your inbox yesterday, Andy, the first research dossier for season two of the Super League War. So we're going really hard at it. It's coming along so nicely. I'm really pumped for the next season. But the rest of this year will be devoted to getting that ready.
Yes, I'm very happy. I received the diplomatic pouch, and and unfortunately, I need a quantum computer to open up the size of this file, but we'll see how we go.
And this is one of the thinner ones you'll get over the course of the next couple of months. So so be ready.
Guys, I can't tell you. I've seen the research as it was being compiled, and you will not believe this season's going to like exceed season one. It's incredible stories.
We've got some really great stuff coming in season two. So thank you for all your support over the last couple of years. So we will be back mid-January with the first chapter of season two of the Super League War. So from me, I just want to thank you all again and have a good rest of 2020.
And thank you, mate, again for providing us with all this great info. And listeners out there, please introduce your friends and family you think might like it, whether it's YouTube or the podcast. Our community is growing every week still, and we have the coolest discussions about football, which we all love.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you, Andy, and we will speak to you next year.
Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.